thrilled to have my old buddy John Mahaffey on the line right now. John, I'm assuming, is down in Texas, enjoying a little Texas sunshine in the fall. John, how you doing?
I'm doing really good, John. Nice to be with you again.
Well, I got to see you briefly in Houston when we worked together. You were a busy man that week.
Well, yeah. Insperity's been a sponsor of mine for quite a while, ever since they've been involved with, it was the Senior Tour at that time, and then we rebranded to the Champions Tour, and they've been along with us for about 9 years. So it's a good partnership.
And, yeah, you hosted dinners. By Sunday afternoon, you looked a little tired.
I was worn out. Yeah.
Which is totally understandable. Before we talk about what's going on in the game today, in just casual conversation in the truck, I can't ask you questions like this. So I'm going to ask you now on the air, because I know that our listeners would love to hear you talk about the last 14 holes at Oakmont in 1978 and then the couple of holes of the playoff. According to what I'm reading here, and I was only 10 years old, you were seven shots behind Watson with 14 holes to go?
I was, and I caught fire. I mean, I was making every putt. In fact, I remember just certain parts of that really stand out. I don't know how many folks out there have played Oakmont, but the 10th hole, I was on the front left of the green, and the pin was in the back right. And I made about a 60-footer with about six breaks in it, and the last 4 or 5 feet were faster than Grease Lightning. So it was, one of those things that you're just trying to not three- or four-putt and just happen to make it, and that kind of was a springboard to really a good back nine, although I did three-putt the 16th hole end up in a tie with Watson and Jerry Pate.
Well, and Jerry Pate was at the height of his powers at that point, and Tom Watson, I mean, was, I would think, the most intimidating player in the game besides Jack at that point, yes?
Well, without a doubt. Tom Watson, it took him a long time to establish himself. In fact, he was given a label of a choker and all that kind of stuff for a while, but boy, when he learned how to win, did he ever learn how to win. And Tom played well, not as well that day as he normally does on the final round of a major championship, that's the last three rounds I played at Oakmont, John, are about as good a golf as I've ever played in my entire life, from tee to green and also on the putting green.
Well, anybody that can break par at Oakmont, any day, any week of the year, because Oakmont's great every week of the year that it's open. That's just tremendous playing. Second playoff hole, was that on 18 or was that a different hole?
It was different. We started the first hole, so Jerry, Tom, and I all parted the first hole, and they hit irons off the second, and I hit a 3-wood down there because I wanted a shorter shot into that green. The hole location was back on the back left, and as long as those fellas were, I didn't quite have their length, and Oakmont was wet at that particular time, which kind of helped a little bit with the greens, but made it play awfully long. I didn't want it to go too far if I could help it. So I hit 3-wood off that tee and hit a 9-iron for my second.
And made a 12-footer to win a major championship.
And made a 12-footer, yeah. Fastest putt in the world. Anybody who's putted at Oakmont will tell you, if you miss that putt, it's still rolling to this day.
Now, you had some near misses, 74 or 75, 76 in the U.S. Open. You came awfully close. You lost in a playoff to Lou Graham. You came close again the next year at the Athletic Club. Were you beginning to think that maybe you were snake bit going into that PGA Championship a few years later?
Well, no, actually, I looked at it a little bit differently. I looked at it like, well, maybe I paid my dues now and it's my turn. And it had been a horrible year for me in 78. I don't think I'd made but maybe a little less than $10,000 to that point. And actually, it happened with 75, John, and I spent and played the morning on Thursday, and I spent that entire time. I went back to my hotel that evening and well after dark. I mean, I hit balls, but I found something, I thought. And, you know, we've all been down that road, as you know, and hopefully it'll work, and it did for 3 days, I'll tell you.
Now, that win got you on the first Ryder Cup team where they let continental Europeans play. In other words, Seve's first Ryder Cup. That had to be a unique treat, and there's only 23 guys that can say they played in Seve's first Ryder Cup.
Well, that's true. I didn't know that. How about that? You're a world of knowledge, my friend.
Was he as fired up in the first one as he would become in later Ryder Cups?
Well, in that, yes, without a doubt, although it didn't have all the notoriety that it's gained over the years and has become quite a competition nowadays, and I think it's fabulous for the game of golf worldwide for it to have that kind of reputation. But he was always fiery. I remember playing with him in a lot of tournaments. I played a couple of PGAs with him in the first two rounds. I played a couple of Masters with him, and I've never seen anybody with that much ability to just get out of any kind of hazard, any kind of problem, and just always had that flair, you know, that Spanish main kind of thing.
Yeah, I would think, obviously I never got to play with him, but I would think that would have been as interesting a guy to play against. And I would think intimidating too, but as interesting a guy to play against as anybody that ever teed it up.
Well, yeah. I mean, Seve had a different kind of well, it was kind of like playing with Roberto De Vicenzo or a lot of those guys. You know, it was their reputations always preceded them, and their abilities were, it was unbelievable just to watch some of the stuff they did. Roberto was great from tee to green and just a magnificent golf swing, and Seve, with his ability to get it up and down, was unbelievable. I mean, there'd be places where you'd bet everything you had that you couldn't even hit it on the green, and he'd hit it close and make it. I mean, it was unbelievable.
Well, you know, and a lot of people remember 1986 for what happened at Augusta National that year. But, you know.
Yeah. You think? Well, yeah.
But you won the players that year. What's that?
When he hit it in the water?
No, I meant I was moving on to the Players' Championship, which in 86. And
well, yeah, wouldn't they remember more of Jack Nicklaus winning the Masters than me winning the Players' Championship?
That's what I was referring to.
I thought maybe, yeah. Well, you know, history will tell you that Nicklaus won that year, and then somebody won the Players' Championship. But that was a great thrill for me. I've been very fortunate in my career to win tournaments at a proper time. So I basically, at that time it was 10-year exemptions, one for the PGA, and then I got another one 8 years into that exemption on playing the Players' Championship, and got me all the way to the Champions Tour, which is kind of cool.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, that is great. It was a fine career. Any regrets? Were there anything you look back on and it still gives you a little pain?
Well, there's a lot of things in my life that give me some pain. I wish I'd have dedicated myself and trained a little bit harder. I think I had a few more golf tournaments in me that I could have won, and maybe a major or two. But as I reflect on that, I think everything happens for a reason. And I'm very, very happy with what I was able to accomplish, and really happy with the time in golf that I did play, because having the opportunity to play with the likes of the Sam Snead and the Ben Hogan, and to have them as friends as well, and then also all the way up to Tiger Woods. It's a pretty cool time to have been around.
No question. Well, you mentioned Ben Hogan. Talk about your relationship with him. How did you get to know Ben?
Well, I was fortunate enough. I graduated from University of Houston in 1970 and went to work for Jackie Burke and Jimmy DeMerritt at Champions, which they let a lot of the University of Houston guys do, kind of knowing they were trying to go to the tour. And Hogan came in, and Hogan was one of DeMerritt's best friends. And Hogan came in, and DeMerritt had arranged a game because he'd known that that's where I learned how to play golf, from Hogan's book. I grew up in Kerrville, Texas. I didn't really have a teacher, so I really learned how to play out of a book. And Hogan was always my idol. Anyway, I played a couple of practice. He was playing practice rounds for the Houston International, it was called at that time, at Champions. Played a couple of rounds with him, and he invited me to go. He asked me if I wanted to play in the Colonial the next week, and I said I wasn't a member of the tour. And he said, I didn't ask you if you're a member of the tour. Would you like to play? And he got me in on a sponsor's exemption, and I finished 11th in the tournament. Went to his company on Monday and signed a contract with him, and had a relationship for 20 years.
Yeah, I mean, and you told me a story just a little while ago, or a few weeks ago, about Ben going with JC to see Sam. And what did Sam call you?
Well, I was lucky enough. You know, there was a little rivalry there, kind of like a Nicholas Palmer thing between Snead and Hogan. So when I got a chance years ago to play with Sam Snead for the first time at Sedgefield. And Sam walked up to me. I introduced myself. I said, I'm John Mahaffey. He says, yeah, I know who you are. He says, you're Hogan's boy, aren't you? And all throughout that round, it was like the third round of the tournament, Sam had hit a shot, and he'd look at me. He'd go, Hogan could never do that, and kind of chuckle, you know. And he played pretty good. I think he shot in the 60s at that time, and he was no spring chicken.
Right.
And so years later, JC and I, his nephew and I, became very good friends. So we went to visit Sam, and we were at his home, and Sam looked, and JC said, you remember John, don't you? And he looked at me and goes, yeah, you're Hogan's boy, aren't you? So he never forgot that.
Oh, that's great. And here we are in just a brand new era of golf, I think. Whether or not the Tiger Woods era is over, I don't think any of us have any idea. I don't think it is. I'm pretty sure that you don't think it is either. But we've seen some very interesting things happen this year in golf with so many young winners. Do you like that? Do you think it's good for the game?
Well, I think it's good to have the talent that's emerging. I think Tiger, I really don't think Tiger's through. I think there's a lot of talent there. Now, whether he'll surpass Jack or not, that's to be seen. But to see the Keegan Bradleys and to see the McIlroys and, you know, the Ricky Fowlers and Luke Donalds, all these guys come around, I think it's tremendous for the game of golf. And it just shows me that, you know, you can make a few changes in different things and equipment and stuff like this, and all these guys learn how to play with what they're dealt with. Or what the cards they're dealt. So they know how to play the new golf balls and all this kind of stuff, and they know how to play with these new golf clubs, and they do it very, very well, and the talent is incredible. And I think that's very good for the game.
Well, you mentioned that you know, in retrospect, you wish that you'd kept yourself in better shape. Were there players going to the gym in the late 70s and early 80s when you were at your best?
Well, probably a little bit, but not near what they do today. And I think they were just kind of getting into the real stretching and all the stuff that you need to do to keep your body limber enough to play this game. And I think, you know, Gary Player obviously was the guy that the Jack LaLanne, if you want, you know, of the tour at that time. And he was about the only guy that did it that meticulously. I think there were guys that tried to stay in shape, but they did. You know, maybe they jogged a little bit or stuff like that, but nobody really knew what they were doing. And now it's more specific, golf specific, and I think that's good. Kids are getting into it earlier. They start in competition earlier. When they get to the tour, they're ready to play. You know, they're competitively tough.
I agree with that. And I think we've seen something. You cover the Champions Tour for the Golf Channel. That's the voice of John Mahaffey, which you know well. You cover the Champions Tour. Those guys, I was on the driving range with you a couple of weeks ago. I thought, well, at least there'll be four or five guys out here fatter than me. Oh, no, they're all the same size or skinnier than they were when they were playing the regular tour.
Well, you know, just because you turn 50 doesn't mean that those competitive juices go away. And
right.
And when you come out here, a lot of guys have the misconception that it's pretty easy and they're playing, 6,200-yard golf courses. And that's not the case. And if you're going to come out here and win on the Champions Tour, you better be ready to play, and you better have some game. And you got to be in good shape, and that's what these guys do now.
And you guys are headed to the Charles Schwab Cup next week at Harding Park, just a terrific golf course in San Francisco where the President's Cup was a couple of years ago. You know, Tom Lehman has an opportunity to do something that's never been done before. I don't think he'll be the only one to ever do it. But he has a good chance to become the first player to be player of the year on the Nationwide Tour, the PGA Tour, and the Champions Tour. That's a pretty awesome feat.
Yeah, it is. And I agree with you. He's got a great opportunity, and I agree another way that he won't be the only one to do it, but he's got the chance to be the first one to do it.
Yeah. I don't think you can go back any farther than him. I mean, what was he, champion or Nationwide Tour player of the year in its third year? So I think that he's about it in that regard. And that player of the year thing, well, there were a couple of guys there that pretty much dominated it for a long period of time in Tiger and Vijay. So, he could be the only one. David Duvall might have a chance.
There you go.
He was player of the year in 99, and he has almost a decade before he gets out there to the Champions Tour. Will you still be covering him at that point?
You're making me feel old, my friend. You're making me feel very old. Of course I will. I'm going to be out there when I'm 90. You have to put up with me.
Let's talk before I let you go. I promised you 10 minutes. I've already kept you for 15. But I do want to talk about the broadcasting and moving into the booth. You seem like you're having such a good time, and that comes across on the air. Is that an accurate statement?
I have never had more fun in my life. I have the people that I work with are a blast to work with. I've never laughed more. I've never had more fun. I've never learned more. And I'm having the best time. And at this time in my life where a lot of people are retired, I want to keep working because this is absolutely fun. And it's not all time consuming and all that kind of stuff. There's plenty of time off between tournaments a lot of times and stuff, but just enough to pique your interest. And it's a different way of maybe contributing to the tour, maybe with a little knowledge, maybe with a little fun. And I love it.
Yeah, and I'm sure that your time at home is spent your kids are almost grown,
right?
But I'm sure you enjoy your time at home as well. Do you play any golf these days?
Well, I had a double hip replacement. I think we chatted a little bit about that about a year and a half ago, and I can start playing golf now without any pain. And actually, I'm a little afraid to go out. The first five shots I hit when I came back were all shanks, and I've never shanked it in my life, so. I'm not really sure what that means, but I think a little later on I got to where I could hit it pretty solid. So I'm looking forward to playing at least with my buddies. Probably nothing competitive, but just have fun with it.
Well, you could do the Super Seniors or one of those for the fun of it, couldn't you?
Well, I could. I play the Legends every year with my partner Jerry Hurd, but we're in one of those upward divisions that the money doesn't count, towards your career earnings and stuff, so we don't make anybody mad. But we have a lot of fun, and it's good to be with the guys. It was good to see Don January was down here for the Insperity Championship, and just visiting with the guys that were so inspirational to me when I first started playing, to see them around from time to time is just, it's great. It's what makes our fraternity, if you want to put it that way, so wonderful.
No, I agree with you, and I could spend hours talking to you. Please come back and join us again soon.
John, I would be happy to. You can call me anytime.
Yeah, I would love to talk to you about Palmer and Nicklaus and all of those things. So maybe after the Charles Schwab Cup in a couple of weeks, when you get back home, we'll do this again.
Give me a shout. I'll do it.